Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the new Peace of Heaven Project podcast, Peace Talk. If you haven't had a chance to listen to episode 1 yet, don't forget to check out our interview with the wonderful Colleen Sissons and her inspiring journey from cattle rancher to vegan volunteer here at Peace of Heaven Project. Today we are talking to the Mark and the Sharon Starmer. Peace of Heaven Project wouldn't exist without these two amazing humans. Hello, welcome.
Hello.
Hello, Gemma. Nice to be with you.
Not sure we're very amazing then. We'll try to be amazing today.
All right. So, two Brits found themselves saving animals in one of the most beautiful corners of the world. You set up Peace of Heaven Project in October 2015, exactly 8 years ago this month. Tell us how Peace of Heaven Project came about.
Well, it's kind of a long story, so I'll keep it as short as I possibly can. We've always been animal lovers. We started actually by rescuing dogs, which we did. I think the first rescue dog we got was in about 1999. And by the time we got to 2012, we got 36 dogs we rescued from all over the place. Now, when you've got that many dogs, it doesn't necessarily win you a lot of friends. And we ended up having to move home. It was a case of either give up the dogs or give up our home. So there was no contest. We gave up our home. And we moved from just outside Calgary in Alberta to this place here, which is Burton, BC, which is absolutely in the middle of nowhere. We found that we had suddenly lots and lots of land that was doing absolutely nothing. And we decided that we would start a basically a farm animal sanctuary. So here we are.
Wow. And how did you settle on Burton, BC?
Oh, another interesting story. I will let Sharon speak at some point, don't worry. I was actually looking up a real estate agent system called MLS. And we were searching in an area which was actually south of Calgary, called Waterton Lakes. And there aren't many properties that come up there. And you select what properties you want to see from a map, and it'll bring you up pictures. And so I selected the three properties that I wanted to see in that area. And on there were three side by side on the page. The one in the middle wasn't in Waterton, it wasn't in Alberta, even, it was in Burton. So we looked at that and thought, that's curious that that's being shown here. But funnily enough, that exactly meets our needs. And we came to visit, and lo and behold, it did meet our needs. The realtor said, whatever you do, don't buy this place. It's not good. It's awful. We said, no, this works. And here we are. And we've been here now for 10 years.
Yes,
Yeah, just
10
10
years
years
this month.
this past Thanksgiving, Canadian Thanksgiving.
Wow. So why did the real estate say it's horrible, yet you've called it Peace of Heaven?
Well, it was the actual building itself was not in good repair. It was going to need a lot of work. It had also not been lived in for 2 years. And previously it had been rented. So, it wasn't a desirable physical property. The land was beautiful, but the house itself was not.
Yeah, we were coming along with 36 dogs. The guy who'd lived here had 25 parrots.
Wow.
And these parrots had just been left to fly around the house, and parrots do a lot of damage. Not as much as dogs, but they do a lot of damage. So we replaced one form of damaging creature with another. And we still haven't done the work that was required on the property, by the way, to make it look perfect. It's nice, it's our home, it suits us, but it's not. It's You couldn't sell it easily after we've been in it. But
Sure.
All right. So you had a pack of dogs when you arrived. Who were your first rescues since you arrived in Burton, and how did they come to be at the sanctuary?
you don't even know that.
okay. Well, we were actually contacted by a woman who lived in Edmonton, who had very sad story actually. She had a herd of alpacas, which he used for wool, which doesn't really sit with us terribly comfortably, but at least she wasn't killing them. Her husband died, and she was left with this massive herd to try and take care of, and couldn't really cope. Her herd then got attacked by a pack of wild dogs, and as fate would have it, they managed to get all of the best alpacas and leave 9 rather old and decrepit specimens who weren't terribly healthy or getting on terribly well. She tried to sell them. Nobody wanted them. She was offered $50 per alpaca for them to go for dog food. And she wanted to know if we would consider taking them. And we said yes. So I drove up with a horse trailer, and it's a long way to go to Edmonton, picked up these alpacas and drove all the way back with them. And they were our first.
It was an overnight journey, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was a 3-day trip. Mm. I went on one day, came back on the next, but had to stay overnight because it's just so far. It's a long, long way. Everything in Canada is a long way.
Yeah, for the alpacas as well, right? It's a long journey.
Yeah, they actually did very well. They do what's called cushing. And as soon as the trailer started moving, they cushed, which is they basically lie down, curl up, and they're quite happy just cushing. And I'd stop to see if they wanted to rest, and there they were on the floor cushing. Going a bit further, stop again, there they were, still cushing. And they push all night, they push all day.
I think they were happy because they came as the herd. They hadn't been split up, so they weren't too concerned. That's what I'd like to think, anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, this was all a long time ago now. Of those initial 9, sadly, we only have 1 now, Spice Girl. And the others, over the space of the years, have all gone, unfortunately, all passed.
I have to ask, how did she get that name?
We don't know. She came with it.
Oh, okay. Yes. We'll never know.
Animals, we change a lot of names that they come with. Those, we never change them. And they had all sorts of funny names. There was no consistency. But she was Spice Girl.
But another one of them was called Ginger, wasn't it? Ginger, something like that. And so I think the person could have had, you know, Spice Girl.
Yeah, there's a theme.
Somewhere.
Okay. So how do you tend to find out about new animals that need rehoming, and how does that process usually work?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Once you start to rescue anything, you get known very, very quickly. It's quite odd, word goes around. When we started with dogs, we used to get people just show up at our gates sometimes and say, "We hear you're taking dogs, can you help?" We got a husky dumped on our doorstep once that way. With farm animals, we get them from people who've heard about us, from other animal sanctuaries who can't actually cope and say, "Can you help with this animal?" We've had some from a sanctuary that actually closed down. There was a local sanctuary that was actually quite well supported, a distance from where we are. And they came along and said, "Look, we are closing down. Can you take all of our animals?" which we couldn't, but we ended up with 2 cows who were quite small at the time, who've grown into giants, Jimmy and Julian. They are really huge. They're about 7 feet tall at the shoulder, no exaggeration. And we took some goats from them as well. So, yeah, they come from all sorts of different sources. There's an organization, a local organization, which tries to be a kind of, how can I put it, a catchment for all animals, and then they will farm them out to different sanctuaries. And we've had a few from them. We've had geese from them and other things.
But oh, and the Highland cow.
Yes.
One of the Highland cows. Yes.
But we've got in total, I kind of lose count, it's over 150 animals. And so it's difficult to remember all the different sources that they've come from. I have to be with the animal to remember its history.
Wow. So is there a certain amount of animals that you think, no, we can't take anymore, like we've reached our limit, or...
reached our limit when we got to 50. But mysteriously,
they just keep coming.
They just keep coming.
Yeah, it's very difficult to say no. The biggest issue for us is actually providing for them physically. We have we've got 95 acres in total, and that sounds great and huge, but it's not, because the vast majority of it is thick forest. The area of the land that we can use and actually grow food on for the animals, which is basically just grass, is about a third of the land in total, if that. And we haven't managed to actually yet raise enough money to actually fence and enclose all of the area that we can to make it safe for feeding. Mm-hmm. So we're very much restricted by our ability to provide for their eating needs. At the moment, everything is done via buying great big rounds of hay. And these huge hay bales, which weigh about £1,200 each and cost over $100 each, they'll eat one of those between them in a day.
Wow. So it's expensive to run a sanctuary.
It's very, very expensive, yeah. People don't realise just how expensive it is. They think, oh, it'd be nice to have a sanctuary, but there are so many ongoing costs, you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah. So what does a typical day look like in the lives of Mark and Sharon?
There isn't a typical day. We kind of go from one thing to another. Even if we plan the day, it seems to never follow the plan, because, you know, with animals or farm animals, dogs, cats, that they have their own life to lead, and sometimes it gets complicated, and of course we're the ones that have to uncomplicate the situation. So we couldn't say there was very typical day, apart from making sure that everyone gets fed, everyone has access to water, and nothing has gone disastrously wrong. We've had a good day, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Even today, you know, we're sitting here talking today's crisis, and farm animal sanctuaries are an exercise in crisis management. Today's crisis is about, well, we were expecting a hay delivery, but the person who delivers our hay isn't able to deliver today, so somebody's had to go and fetch that. And the remarkable Colleen has actually come this morning, taken our trailer and gone off to drive some considerable distance, including two ferry crossings, to actually go and pick up hay for us. It's typical of what goes on. Mm-hmm. Something is always going wrong. It's true. You really can't plan your day. I mean, we start with best of intentions, and then everything goes to hell.
So you mentioned Colleen there. How many volunteers help out out at the sanctuary on a weekly basis?
Good question. I mean, I know you're looking at us and you're seeing two 27-year-olds, but we're not actually quite that young. Everybody who's involved with the sanctuary over here is 60 plus, some a lot older. We're kind of on a law of depreciating returns. People who used to be able to volunteer and would come regularly can't anymore, because it's just physically too much. And in terms of actually physically hands-on doing the work of the day-to-day sanctuary operations here, if we get 4-6 hours help per week, we're doing really well, and we're profoundly grateful for that. What our volunteers do most of is helping to raise the funds to pay for the hay and the foodstuffs, and that's fantastic. We couldn't do without that. We treasure them if only for that. Most of the work is actually done by our son Tristan, who's still living at home. He's special needs, and he's brilliant at actually helping out and making sure that everything keeps running. So we don't get as much help as we'd like, or we could benefit from. A lot of people locally have volunteered or suggested that they'd like to come and volunteer, and then they never follow through, which is quite sad, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in part it's because we are vegan. Everybody knows this is a vegan sanctuary. We are, if I can put it this way, militant vegans. We are very, very profoundly convicted in our beliefs about veganism, and we are known locally as the cult, the vegan cult. Now, if you ask somebody what vegan means around here, they'll most likely say, oh, yeah, you come from the planet Vega. No. Seriously, I'm not joking. People have asked me that. Does this mean you come from this other planet? No. It's a lifestyle choice.
Oh, wow. So there aren't that many vegans accessible vegan.
No. I
Oh,
mean,
wow.
you kind of have to be here to experience it. We are literally in the middle of nowhere. There are small communities dotted around, and there are some people there who are kind of pursuing, if I can put it this way, alternate lifestyles. There are some vegans for sure, but in terms of a large community, the nearest large vegan community is actually a place called Kelowna, which is 3 hours away from here.
Right, okay. Whenever I think of BC, I think of Vancouver, and there's so much amazing choice for vegans in Vancouver.
No, not where we
Not
live.
inverted.
I mean, what people don't necessarily realize in terms of, is the sheer size of Canada. So England, for instance, would fit into British Columbia five times. And so everything is a long way away. The communities are kind of spread out all over the place. They're quite small communities for the most part. And then you get these massive conglomerations like Vancouver. And Kelowna, I think, is the second biggest city in BC. But that's not very big. It's less than 1 million people. So, I mean, a community like Burton, where we live, 450 people.
Wow. And are they predominantly farmers or ranchers?
Put it this way, most of them would come from a rural background. We do live very near to a farm. We are not exactly popular with them, so they actually spread stories about us. They told somebody who we know that we stole our animals. We've had somebody who came and wanted us to take one of their cast-off animals. We get a lot of people locally who very, very happily give us their cast-off animals, but don't actually want to help. Somebody came locally. We couldn't help him, and he then wrote a nasty review about us, saying that we actually fed our animals to our dogs, which is obscene from our perspective. It's the last thing we would ever do.
Yeah, it's not a very vegan.
No, it's
Okay. So, in terms of the basics, how much time does it take to do the feeding and the watering of animals before you even get onto the unexpected tasks?
Business of the day,
Yeah,
isn't it?
it's actually pretty much an all-day job. I mean, Tristan, bless his cotton socks, tends to work all day on the feeding and the watering. I'm the guy who deals with the crisis stuff. Sharon takes care of the dogs. Any help we get onto for that is just bonus. It's added value to us, and that's mostly cleaning and clearing chores. I deal with all of the kind of the construction projects, and there are always ongoing construction projects.
Repairs.
We have a wonderful guy called Mark, who comes and helps us out. Oh, another Mark. Mark's a good people. Another guy called Mark, who comes along and actually helps with some of the maintenance jobs that are too complicated for me. That kind of implies that I'm simple, but I'm not.
There's only so much you can do.
Absolutely.
So we have a question on social media from Colleen, and she asks, do you ever go on holiday?
What's for
No, what's
holiday?
a holiday? We'll take that as a no.
Hey, this year it was actually Sharon's 60th birthday. I know she looks youthful and,
Ten.
yeah, looks about 10, but she's actually 60 this year. And we actually drove to Kelowna so that Sharon could get a vegan tattoo. I'm actually covered in vegan tattoos. I could show you some of mine here. Oh, sorry, the folks at home can't see this. It's great. I've got really good tattoos. But Sharon wanted a vegan tattoo, and we drove to Kelowna for the day, and we were actually away for a day. And that was like a holiday. That was the first time Sharon had spent that much time away from the
Away.
property since we moved here.
Wow,
Put it
and
since we moved here.
did you get anxiety? Like, how are the animals? Or do I
Yeah.
miss them? Or
Then, just leaving for 10 minutes, I'm worried. And I feel concerned, and I miss them as well. I actually am happier in the company of dogs and animals and people.
I understand. What, as in you, she's not comfortable with you, or as in you prefer animals?
She's happier with the animals than she's with me.
Okay.
If I want attention, I have to make animal sounds. Moo! This is a joke. If you could see me at home, folks, you would see that I'm smiling and laughing and pulling silly faces. That way you'd know I'm telling a joke. Sorry, it's English humour.
Okay.
Yes.
So I know you've mentioned some of the challenges, but what are the maybe the more unexpected challenges that you've encountered running an animal sanctuary?
Now that the summers are getting increasingly hotter and drier, one of the main concerns, especially this year, was lack of water. We are fortunate enough to have a well that is filled by natural stream, isn't it? It's naturally.
Okay, this isn't really answering the question.
Well, that was another crisis.
That wasn't a crisis.
Yes, it was. It was, Gemma. It was in my mind.
In her mind, we didn't run out of water.
No, but I was concerned.
Yeah, is it because of the grass doesn't grow then, or is it actual drinking water, or is it everything?
Drinking water and the grass not growing.
Okay. That's an issue. It'd be an issue for me.
Yeah, that isn't. I don't think that answers the question. But the kind of crises that we face that take us by surprise are things like animals being born by surprise.
Oh yes, that's another one.
So, for instance, we had a herd of neutered goats. They were all neutered. No chance of having any babies. We went for 3 years with no babies, and then suddenly, babies started to appear 1 year. That took us completely by surprise. And what had happened is one of the goats had been castrated, and they'd grown back. They only managed to get one and not both.
That also happened with a lamb that we had taken in. And
we had the vet certificate to say they'd been neutered.
To show that they'd been neutered. But a couple of years later, not so.
Yeah. So those are really surprising crises, especially if the mothers then refuse to actually feed.
Yeah.
And we end up with our bathroom is full of little animals. We make a mess.
Wow. So life will find a way.
It will.
Yeah.
It always does, yeah.
Oh. So do you ever get fed up? Do you ever wake up and think, I can't be bothered today, or I just want to quit?
Not really.
No.
It can be very emotionally wearing. Mm. Because we've got 150 animals. We're not actually making that much of a difference, not as much as we'd like to. We make a difference to the lives of these animals. We make a difference, hopefully, to those people who visit and see them. And maybe it encourages them to go vegan, not necessarily, or maybe it reinforces their commitment to veganism, which is a great thing. But that part of it, knowing that there's still so many terrible things going on that affect billions of animals every year, that's hard. We also, obviously, since we take in animals that are cast-offs, nobody wants, are on their last legs, we lose a fair few every year. That's never easy. More than anything, it's the emotional part that's draining. It's not something we get fed up with. People who start sanctuaries and get fed up, and we've come across them, they should have done their research before they started to find out what it's really like as a lifestyle. And if you can't cope with that lifestyle, don't do it. It becomes everything. It's your entire life. It consumes you.
Yeah, yeah. And I would imagine the people that want to do that initially is, it's about the animals more than themselves. And mm-hmm. I would expect that would, that would be what drives you. But mm-hmm. I guess it could get overwhelming, and it's a lot of hard work. And like you said.
Yeah, I mean, the sanctuary that we took animals from closed down. It had been the dream of one of the people involved with that to have an animal sanctuary. And then when they had that dream, the dream didn't actually, the reality of the dream didn't match the way they thought it was going to be. It's something you've got to think about very, very carefully. I mean, I think that year we knew of two other sanctuaries that had closed down. So three in total in just 1 year. And they kind of pop up, or people start micro sanctuaries, and then they can disappear again very, very quickly. You've got to be in it 100%.
Yeah. So tell us about your personal vegan journeys.
Well, they kind of joined, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they're all very much tied together. Yes. Because it was my fault. so we kind of toyed with vegetarianism since 1990, or I had more enthusiasm than Sharon had. And we'd moved to Canada by the time we actually went vegan. And then I saw on Facebook a Facebook page, which was simply called Redefining Animal Slaughter as Murder. And I looked at it, and it wasn't hardcore. It wasn't unpleasant in the way that you can see lots of unpleasant videos online. But I looked at this, and it did something to me. It lit some spark of a flame somewhere. And I quite literally, the computer was in the basement, and I walked upstairs and I said to Sharon, we're going vegan. And Sharon said, okay. So I spent the afternoon clearing everything that wasn't vegan out, putting it into boxes. We gave it all to our neighbors who were hunters and meat eaters. And from that day on, we went vegan. Tristan was living with us, our son. And so he had no choice but to go vegan. He embraced it. Our daughter, Jenny, was away at university. When she came back, we kind of said, okay, we're vegan now, so you only get vegan food here. And she reacted against it for years, didn't she? And she'd come home and I'd give her a hard time, and we'd have arguments about it, and she still wouldn't commit. And then suddenly something got her as well. She became a vegan. She's got more vegan tattoos than Sharon. And she's deeply committed. She even works for Vegan Supply in Vancouver, who are a company who actually sell a whole range of vegan products and foodstuffs. Great company, terrific store. Quick push for them there. Vegan Supply, Vancouver. Excellent. Get them online.
So having spent every day with farm animals that not many people get to interact with on a daily basis, what have you learned from them, and what can we as humans learn from them? And especially as animals that have come from less than ideal situations and been given a second chance at life, what do you think they would say to us if they could use English? Big question.
What I would say is we're very similar beings, not physically, but all the other parts of just being alive. They think, they feel, they have emotions, they have their own needs, they have their own pathway to follow. And they haven't been created just to fulfill our needs or what we want in life, but they're our equals. That's what I think they might say to us.
Yeah, I think they'd say stop.
Yeah.
Stop the perpetual cycle we have of breeding them just so that we can kill them. I mean, if there's such a thing as reincarnation, I don't know why they keep coming back, because they're just in this hideous cycle, and it's not the way it should be. It's not the way it could be. I think what I learned most from them personally is, it's nothing to say, because I kind of use the word in its proper context, but I have experienced their humanity. And as Sharon says, they are so much more like us than we would actually ever consider possible. And until you've actually experienced the closeness of being with them and kind of living side by side and seeing their different personalities and their characters and their different behaviors and the little personality quirks, you wouldn't accept them as the equals that they really are. They're just in another form. They have souls, they have a sense of their being and a self-worth. I find it farcical that scientists have just finally accepted that animals can have feelings and can actually experience pain. I mean, oh, for God's sake, you've just got to look at them and you see it all the time. And that's not just physical pain, that's emotional pain.
Yeah. So I'm sure the animals at the Peace of Heaven Project Sanctuary do communicate with you, and I'm sure that you understand a lot of what they are saying, just like we do with our pets at home. What's the difference between a pet and a farm animal?
Our choice. Dogs and cats, they're the lucky ones. They're the ones who we picked at whatever point it was in history and decided these could live alongside us. We've had quite literally sheep running around the house with the dogs. we've had goats, even geese, all of them. They are perfectly happy to engage in an emotional relationship with humans if you but give them the opportunity and the time. And okay, some of them might have unfortunate toilet habits, but it's frankly so do some of our dogs, the old and incontinent ones. And if we could but get past the way in which we are almost brought up to view them, which is as inferiors, we could actually see any of them in the context of being pets, as being friends, as being lifelong companions. We've got some incredibly personable sheep. Goats are just bundles of fun. Geese are endlessly appealing. The cows are affectionate. I mean, people accept horses. And, you know, people who are horsey people will tell you about how fabulous their horses are and how much they feel. Yeah, so do they all of them.
Yeah. I think it definitely, how you treat an animal affects how, well, I don't know if it's how you see it or how the animal behaves then. Even with rabbits, which are a common pet, when I, you know, if people see a photo of my rabbit sleeping on the end of my bed, or they know that my rabbit roams around my house, then they're like, but doesn't it like poop everywhere? And it's like, no, if you give it this space like you would, you know, a clean house to live in, it, you know, it will go somewhere else. The only reason it goes in this tiny cage is that's all it has. So even for pets, people still have this different, like, they categorize which pets can do what, which ones have to live in a little box, which ones can share your home with you. So I'm sure it's the same for farm animals as well.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, our daughter Jenny has had rabbits for years.
She still has.
And still does. Yeah. And her rabbits are free roam. They use a litter tray. Yeah. We had a friend in the UK, a lovely guy called Lloyd, and his family had a pet rabbit that would actually use the toilet. Not a litter tray. It would literally use the physical toilet, and it would hop up onto the toilet seat and use the toilet.
Wow.
And and he was an amazing rabbit.
Yeah.
Wow. Now I feel like my rabbit's not been properly trained. Wow. I've never seen that before. I'd love to see a video of that and maybe some coaching on how to do that.
He was a big rabbit,
yeah. But he really was an amazing creature.
Yeah.
But they all are.
Yeah. So if you could say anything to the people hearing this podcast right now, what message would you want to share?
Well, mine would be the same one. Stop. I am constantly frustrated because I can't understand the logic of anybody who does not look at the suffering of other creatures and recognize their own culpability in that and recognize that they can so easily do something about it. I really don't get it. I mean, if you've ever perused my blogs on the website, I get so wound up about the fact that people just can't follow the logic train. It doesn't make sense to do the damage that we're doing for so many reasons And if it's not about the sentience of the beings, if it's not about compassion, if it's not about your health, and if it's not about the planet, then what type of a person are you? For what reason are you still doing this? Anyway, that's yeah. My soapbox.
So following on from what Marcus said, stop, I would say start thinking. Start thinking about what you're actually doing out of habit. You know, why do you continue to eat animals? You know that it leads to disease, it leads to the destruction of the environment. It's just not a good thing on so many levels. Why continue with something that is not good and causes great suffering?
Yeah.
You know, I think we become unconscious when it comes to food and habits. It's something that we've just, oh yeah, this is what you do if you are human. Why? It's because we've been told that this is what you do. Start thinking. Think about your choices. That's what I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. You just need to make the connection, and once you make that connection, you don't go back. It's like not an option.
Yeah.
But it is, it's a series of connections, isn't it? Because, I mean, we know lots of people who've gone vegan for just the health reasons, and they're not interested in the compassion part of it, and they'll go back. They'll revert to eating meat at some point. It's when you get the compassion piece, I think, that it really wraps it up for you.
Yeah, It's like taste. Just, it's like this tiny, tiny thing that just, it's not relevant when you think about, you know, the whole suffering and everything else that goes with that.
So much more than a dietary choice. It is a whole lifestyle.
Yeah, if you
go vegan.
Yeah, if you make the connection and you do really love animals, like many people say they do, then it's, you know, you can't just suddenly not love animals anymore.
Sorry, we totally lost that. You broke up.
So I said, if you make the connection and you, it's because you love animals and you realize that, then you don't suddenly stop loving animals and then go back on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So on a more positive note, what is the future of Peace of Heaven Project? So what's next?
Well, we have plans to open a retreat where we'd like to invite people to come and experience being here and staying with us for a day or two or however long they want to. So that's really exciting. We're just beginning to get that off the ground. So if people are interested, we'd encourage them to sign up for the newsletter, keep checking back on the website, you know, follow us on social media, and lots more news, exciting news to come.
Yeah, fantastic. So when people come and stay with you for a day or two, what kind of things are they doing? Are they going to be helping out on the sanctuary, volunteering?
I think it's an issue of what people want to do. I mean, there are people, I'm sure, who would love to come and help out, and we'd love to have them here helping us. But it's an area that's rich in things to do. There's a wonderful Arrow Lake where you can actually go boating or paddleboarding or kayaking, whatever you want to do. There are lots of places to visit. There are some great microbreweries locally.
With vegan beer,
absolutely.
Of course.
When I say locally, I mean about 3 hours away, but that's local for us. there's a wealth of things to actually do, but the way we envisage the retreat working, I mean, if people come for 2 days, if people come for a week, we would like it to be a place where people feel rejuvenated, where they actually have the experience of reconnecting perhaps with their own vegan values and why they're doing it, of being spurred to doing greater things when they return to their own world, where they're actually trying to make a difference. One of my criticisms, if I can dare use the word, to the vegan population is a lot of people who are vegan, well, that's great. They've altered their diets and they're living a harm-free lifestyle, but they aren't doing enough to actually change the world around them. And we can all influence everybody who we encounter to actually recognize the folly of what's going on in the world as a whole. And only together will we actually manage to bring about a wholesale change globally. And so if we can play some little part in helping people who get weighed down by veganism, I mean, you will have experienced it yourself, Emma, I'm sure, as vegans are a minority group. And as being part of that minority, well, I've certainly experienced abuse. I've been called terrible things online, unspeakable things. And there's some healing that needs to go on as a result of that. So we would like to help people come here and actually heal. It's a gorgeous location. You've got all the animals here. The energy's fantastic. There's lots to do locally. We can even offer you some great vegan food if you're not so good at cooking yourself. So yeah, all sorts that we'd like to do.
And just being immersed in the natural world, the surroundings are just breathtaking here. We're very lucky to live in this part of the world. And even though it is in the middle of nowhere, it's a good thing to be in the middle of nowhere sometimes. You know, lots of people need to get out of the city and need to just be immersed in, you know, the trees and listen to birds and hear water. That kind of thing is very, very healing.
Yeah, I love the sound of water if it's raining. Yes. Or if I can sleep next to a creek, I'm happy.
Yeah.
So you're right what you said about, you know, sometimes I think when people go vegan and they make that connection and you think, oh, everyone else is going to see it as well now. It's so simple and so clear for you. And then you talk to people and then you just get it's like, I don't know, the rejection so much just kind of shuts you down and then you just don't talk about it anymore. I remember one of my friends, so I had a vegan friend for a while before I went vegan. And after I went vegan, I was like, why didn't you ever, like, I knew that she was vegan, and when we go to restaurants, I knew that she was a drama to order food with, but I didn't really know much about what a vegan was or why or anything. And after I went vegan, I was like, why didn't you tell me? Because she'd been vegan for like 30 plus years, and I was like, why didn't you like tell me? Like, you could have stopped me so much sooner. And she's like, oh, well, everyone's just so defensive, so I don't talk about it anymore. And I'm like, but you could have changed me. And she was like, yeah, but you're the only person that I would have changed. No one else cares. So I think it does kind of like wear away at you. And yeah, that not the passion and enthusiasm for caring for animals goes, but you just kind of stop talking about it because you feel like everyone knows, but they just don't care.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But that's precisely what I'm talking about when I'm saying that people need to not be, frankly, cowardly about it. And I know it's easy to get beaten down as a result of what you face, but you're not actually making that much of a difference if you're just doing it for yourself and you're keeping it to yourself. I had a very similar experience of going to dinner with a lady who was vegan, and I was a vegetarian at the time, and she was asking about vegan options on the menu, and I didn't understand why she was vegan. And I wrote to her years later and said, why didn't you tell me? And I might have gone vegan sooner, a lot sooner. And as the saying goes, the only thing you ever regret about going vegan is that you didn't do it sooner.
Yeah. It's very difficult as well, because you don't know how people are going to respond, and you don't know if you're going to be one of these people that, you know, they already know everything that you're saying, but you're just saying it over and over again. And then it kind of stops you from saying it to people who might not know, just because you assume everybody knows, but they don't care. So it's a difficult balance. But yeah. All right. So, if there's anything our listeners can do to help, what is it, or how can they get involved in the project?
Follow us on social media. That would be wonderful, and so stay connected that way. And you know, if we've got any fundraisers that we're organising, then support in the form of donations would be hugely appreciated. That's what I would say to the listeners.
Yeah, I agree.
All right.
Send cash. We're always desperate for money.
Fantastic. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to add before we finish up today?
No, other than to thank anybody who's listening for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't understand English humour, I apologise. I'm not insane.
Just English.
Just English. We may have been here for 17 years, but we're still
Brits at heart.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's all.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your incredibly busy schedules to talk to us today. You really are making a huge difference to the 100 plus animals you've welcomed into your home over the past decade, as well as the many more people who you inspire through the work you do and the vegan message you share. It takes some really special people to dedicate their entire lives to speaking out for those who don't have a voice. So thank you, Mark and Sharon. As always, if you'd like to get involved by volunteering, sponsoring one of our resident animals for as little as $30 a year, or simply by making a donation, head on over to our website to find out how you can do that at pohpsanctuary.com. While you're there, make sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter to keep up to date with everything going on out here at the sanctuary, and of course, so you can be one of the first guests to experience peace when you visit our much anticipated vegan retreat and stay in our luxury accommodations opening summer 2024. In our next episode, we'll be chatting to Marie Sola, Hippocrates trained natural health educator. She'll be sharing her expertise on thriving on a vegan diet, including raw nutrition, intermittent fasting, and some natural remedies for optimal health at this time of year. If you have any questions for Marie, you can, of course, hit us up on social media. Thank you for all of your support. Thanks for listening. Until next time, peace out.